Welcome to Speaking of Strong Style, where we discuss the news, issues, and events surrounding New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm Stephen Conway. With me, of course, is Jeremy Finestone. We are contributors to the Fight Game Media Network, and we are coming off the finals of the New Japan Cup, Jeremy, and I have to say, a pretty strong finish to what we were not totally sure of a week ago. I feel like we were on the fence as far as this goes, but overall...
Totally went according to plan, right?
It always does. It always does. Yes, it was a last-minute substitution that we think had an impact on a lot of things. But
call the thing a disaster a week ago. And I don't know. They pulled something out that felt pretty good. And I was a fan.
Yeah. And, you know, it is interesting. We're going to go over, of course, all of that. And it did its job in another way, too. We're going to go right off the bat to the finals. We're not going to make you wait. And then we'll go back to the quarters and work our way forward, because really yesterday was a pretty significant show, set up a lot of things as far as the direction of the company moving forward. And I think there is a little bit more room. I'm not saying everything's perfect now, but I do feel like there is more room for optimism than there was a week ago. And that might be me just talking.
I'm definitely in a chipper mood coming into the show, way more than I've been about watching New Japan. You know, you're kind of even keel, like, yeah, you know, there are things here and there that you can get excited about. It's like the right guy won the tournament and the right match was had to win that tournament. And, you know, you talk about some other places. We'll talk about, you know, New Japan, it's just one match here or there that people gravitate towards, but there's a lot of undercard like stuff that people don't pay attention. That's very true, but there's also mythology that's built in that. And there was a lot of mythology built throughout this tournament that kind of elevated the guy who won. It was a tough slog, 1000%, but once you're able to kind of sift through everything, it came out really well.
All right, so we do have some questions, of course, from Dunstan. We appreciate it, Colin. excuse me, goodness, a little early for me to lose my voice already, but just wanted to say thank you for you guys for your questions. We are going to get to them. We're going to try to get to them in an order where they make sense and far as what we're talking about as we go along. So we are going to talk about this finals first. So as you probably already know, Yota Tsuji was the winner of the New Japan Cup for 2024, Yota Tsuji. And he defeated Hirooki Goto in the finals. And like you said, Flaming Shark is here. Good to see you, Shark. Says, I don't think anyone had a Goto Tsuji final on their bingo card. Totally agree there. No. As a matter of fact, I don't believe there were any Chris Samsa perfect brackets this year at all. For the first time here in a while, I had to catch up with New Japan stuff after being busy and not watching for a while. Well, I'm glad you're back. And so Yota Tsuji did win the match. It was a terrific final against Hirooki Goto. Of course, Goto was in the finals because David Finlay had to withdraw from the tournament due to illness. Now, we are assuming that. I think just reading tea leaves, that Finlay was going to advance to the finals and it was going to be a good versus evil thing, pardon the pun, with Finlay and Tsuji. Instead, what we got was a rather emotional run for Hirooki Goto. I feel like they just plugged him into that spot and it worked great for a couple of reasons. One, of course, Goto's a great wrestler and still is a really good singles wrestler and exactly the kind of guy who can guide Yota Tsuji through a 20-minute match. Again, we've talked about how he and Uemura and all that aren't used to working 20-minute matches. Well, Goto is a guy who knows how to pace it, knows how to bring it up, take it down, all those things. Working with men like Hirooki Goto in matches like this is what's going to make Yota Tsuji a much better worker. He's already explosive. He's already exciting. He's already charismatic. These are the kind of matches where you really learn how to build drama and keep a match moving for 20 minutes without letting it die off. And it was excellent. It was just a tremendous match. And the other one is an emotional aspect that we didn't want. And that is that Hirooki Goto's father passed away earlier this year. And he's dealing with that. And as best he can, of course, and that's crushing. I dealt with last year with my stepfather who raised me, and it's awful. It's the worst feeling. And he has soldiered through it and dedicated things to his father and his performances to him. And that brought the crowd along with him. There was real empathy and sympathy from the New Japan crowd, which added something to this match. It was a situation both in the Sonata match in the semifinals and the Tsuji match in the finals, Jeremy, where I really felt like this was not good versus evil. The fans liked and loved and were supporting Goto through a very difficult time, but by no means were they directing any anger towards Tsuji or Sonata, and it made for an interesting dynamic.
I thought this crowd was pretty evenly split, actually. I could hear the Yoda chant. I could hear the Goto chant. Yeah. There was something special about these two guys coming into the ring. There are people that'll say that Goto's a little bit past his prime and he's just kind of doing the tag team thing. And he's been a pretty spectacular tag team wrestler for the last 3 years or so. It wasn't according to plan for this dude to be coming in and doing the finals match. But, you know, he only had one match up to that point in the tournament. He was fresh. He was the right guy for the job. And goddamn, if these two guys didn't understand the assignment in this match, which was to make Yoda Tsuji look like a star, they did. You know, it's like Yoda had the pedigree from the Dominion match last year where he had the big match feel. You know, Goto's been there, been to the dance plenty of times before. And there was a lot of work that Goto did to make Yoda look even better than he already did. This was great pro wrestling. It's not going to like win any awards unless you are the biggest Hirooki Goto fan in the world and you choose to vote in to every award this match. But yeah, I don't have bad things to say about it. This is a match in which the consequences felt real and the people wrestling felt like, despite the absolute chaos that it took to get here, it felt like the two right guys to have this match.
And we're not saying that David Finlay and Yoda Tsuji would not have had a good match. They probably would have had a good one. But this was likely a better match, and just a better wrestling match and a better atmosphere. Yeah. They had a good crowd, about 3,000 people. That's down a little bit from last year's finals by about 300. But it was a good crowd, and that crowd was enthusiastic. They were really into things.
The idea of Finlay as the opponent would have been much more traditional heel versus face. And the divisiveness would have been much more clear. But at the same time, it would have felt like it was about Finlay losing instead of Yoda Tsuji winning. Mm-hmm. And this felt like it was about Yoda Tsuji winning, if that makes any sense.
Yes. Yeah, and it was in danger of being a bit of a wreck of a tournament, which we will talk about when we go back a little bit and talk about how we even got here in the first place. Dunstan did have a question that I think is worth mentioning right here. Outside of Yoda Tsuji, who else benefited from the tournament?
Ren Narita. Go for it. Go. Kinda. Get it out. Get it out.
Nobody, I don't think too many people did. The storylines did. There were some things that happened that'll bring us forward into storylines, but does anyone look like anyone other than Yoda Tsuji look like a bigger star? No, but
yes, it's Gabe Kidd.
I don't think so.
You look great in the tournament. He kept out of that tournament.
I don't think it changed anything. He's looked great for months. We've been talking about him on this show as being great.
I hear that. I'm just saying. I feel like the way that this conversation is framed is that like people aren't due their flowers. Like there were some great showings in this tournament, even though the tournament itself is like that.
I mean, who's a bigger star than they were before the tournament? Tsuji is now.
Yeah. Jack Perry.
I think that's about it. Anyway, but the point I'm trying to make about that is they put Tsuji in the main event at Dominion last year, right after Excursion. Right. And he did fine. But he felt like a real main eventer here. He felt like he belonged in the main events. And, you know, what happened here, of course, I thought this was interesting. Goto tried a Rainmaker later in this one.
That's what cost him the match.
Yeah. And he ended up eating the first of two spears. That was a short spear. It wasn't the full Gene Blast. But he did end up hitting the big Gene Blast to win it. Goto has been speaking about carrying Chaos forward. He hasn't declared himself the leader of Chaos, but he has talked about carrying Chaos forward. Meanwhile, Tomohiro Ishii, we're going to get to that, has been talking more about, in backstage comments, teaming with Hantai and working more with Tanahashi. So it sounds like they're kind of moving apart, not enemies, not turning on each other, but moving apart a little bit. By the way, Goto hit my favorite move in professional wrestling is the Shotenkai. I love that move. It looks so friggin' devastating. And he's about the only guy I know that really does it. And man, did it look great right there. Okay, well, yeah, a couple of people think that Jack Perry's a bigger star than he was before he got there. Okay.
Well, I mean, right now, he's goon number two out of four.
Is he number two? Is he ahead of Narita behind Evil?
I think he's behind Narita.
So he's they're both ahead of Evil. Like, what's
okay, I think Evil's the leader, and then he's got four goons.
What are your okay? So Evil's
like,
number one,
there's he's a number gang three, leader, the and then you got like the Joker, and then you got your goons, right?
Okay, pardon me. No, we're doing, so, I like, didn't realize that we're improvising this, folks. We didn't plan on doing House of Torture power rankings, but we can do it. But okay, so Evil's number one, Ren Narita's goon number one,
right?
Behind the leader, and then goon number two, Jack Perry.
Understood. Yes, sir.
Thank you. All right. Yeah. Thank goodness. I needed that comic book reference. Now I'm back. Yeah. But there we go with that. Okay. So after the match, he was in the ring, streamers with the trophy. I love this quote. He obviously thought this through quite a bit. He said, "I have opened the gates to a new era. The reign has stopped. The king of the empire has left." That's your Okada Ospreay references. And he says, "I am here." So there you had it. He will face Tetsuya Naito at Sakura Genesis on April 6th for the IWGP World title. We suspected at the beginning of the tournament that they might do something. This is an opportunity for stuff like this, where you can have faction mates facing each other without turning on each other. Although both Evil and Sonata did turn on LIJ coming off the cup. They didn't do that with Tsuji this time. Still a member, but at the same time, still very much with his eyes set on the IWGP title. I'm looking forward to the match.
Yeah, you know, this show put me in a great mood going forward.
By the way, Venkin mentions, if he's the Joker, Ospreay is Kingpin.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Let's loot
them. I like it. And as Flaming Shark mentions, all things considered, that's not the worst result because it established Perry as a piece of the puzzle, if nothing else, in New Japan. He's firmly established in HOT. Yeah, they made a lot of good and through the tournament. Okay,
but we're going to have to talk about Jack Perry. I realize this now. Like, there's a lot going on with Jack Perry that we're going to have to unpack at some point in this show. Maybe when we get to the Sonata match.
You think there's some subtext going on?
Oh, my goodness. I wrote down his backstage comments after he lost to Sonata. Mm. And it's like, I don't know who he was speaking to, but it might have been one guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way it feels sometimes, doesn't it?
What were we talking about before we went off on this?
Sorry. No, we were talking about Tsuji Naito. I mean, you know, this is the chance for them to do this thing here.
I'm in a great mood. For frankly speaking, I have felt like since Wrestle Kingdom, the tires have been a little bit in the mud because we've had to do the Ospreay Okada goodbye. Then we had Mania, and then we've had the Cup, and it's just been these hyper-focused events for the last 3 months. And now it's like, okay, the table's set. We have the cast of characters for 2024 in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Let's go. And I'm fine with the way everything is set up. Yota Tsuji versus Tetsuya Naito in the main event in the first real like match underway for the season. I'm all about it. Let's do it. That's the kind of thing that's just like, we've been in the mud. We've absolutely just been like LIJ and just five guys and House of Torture and all this stuff. And now it just feels like we've turned the page. And I'm really happy.
Hassan Albana, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I apologize if I didn't. Said Jack's post-match promos have been good. He's improving in this regard. Mm-hmm. No, that I agree with. I think that part of it has been fairly strong. But again, sometimes the best work comes from the truth, doesn't it? And I do think there's a little bit of a chip on Jack's shoulder. I the scapegoat thing, he's playing it up. He's turned it up to 11. But I do think there is a part of him that feels like I'm eating a lot of crap for that whole thing. And there are some people who believe that too, that they're blaming him for not having Punk anymore and Punk going back to WWE and all that. I said on this show and many other shows that was going to happen no matter what. Like Punk was not going to stay in AEW. It was just a matter of what was going to trigger it. But yeah, I mean, it's but I think a lot of this comes from a little place of truth in his heart, what he feels is the truth in his heart with this gimmick, which just makes it all the more real. It makes it feel more authentic. And I think that's shining through.
I mean, I've watched him for the last couple weeks, and the things that I can say are positive is that he is committed to the gimmick. He is all in. He is getting Japanese wrestling fundamentals down, and he is working hard within the ring. It feels like he's made mistakes and he's learning from them within the ring. And I feel like he's taking a shitty situation and turning it into a great opportunity, which is what most people should strive to do if they find themselves in the situation that I think he finds himself in. So I don't know how long he's going to be around. It feels somewhat ambiguous. You know, like, it could be this all gets blown off at Forbidden Door and there's some kind of angle. But at the very least, you know, I think he's New Japan only until Windy City with that. And then AEW has a pay-per-view on, like, the 21st. So he could show up there. He could show up after that. But, you know, until then, I think it's just Jack Perry in Japan.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, and Venkin has it exactly right. It just depends on when Tony wants him back. That's all it is. But, yeah, and the right way for Perry to approach this, in my opinion, is just treat it like you're on excursion. And I know that that doesn't feel great. He wants to be back in AEW, I'm sure. Wants to be close to home, back with his – I know he has friends on the roster. You'd like to be back with them. But just treat this as an experience and a way to get better in the ring for a while, you know, just work matches with New Japan talent and learn a new style and just treat it like that. I feel like he's gonna come back. I don't think Tony's just gonna drop him. It feels like there's a business opportunity here when he does come back, and Tony isn't that's not lost on Tony Khan, even if he's pissed at Jack.
When you kind of think about how this has all played out, right? Like, he stomped on a windshield of a car that was approved for a show. And he popped off and he said something about it being real glass. And a fight ensued. And he got in trouble. And the other guy got fired. I'm pretty sure, you know, like, the boss of the company, in a somewhat immature behavior, has punished this man to extremes for something that was going to happen. Either way, he was just the guy caught holding the match when it happened. And it's completely unfair to him.
Venkin mentions the Meltzer report was Tony's mad at him for losing Punk. I don't think we needed Dave Meltzer to tell us that, but no, fair enough. No, Dave did write it, but we didn't need Dave to tell us.
I mean, you could all read between the lines that no one heard or saw anything from Jack Perry between August 25th and January 13th.
Yeah, there's no lines to read behind. He's suspended.
Like,
Jack, you know,
he was off of television. He could have been suspended, but either way, he was not used because he wasn't injured. So, like, there was an opportunity to use him here and get paid. And I would suspect that New Japan isn't really paying Jack Perry's way in this, and this is all in the AEW dime, given, you know, if you really wanted to think about it, you know, it makes a way more sense if that were the case, and that, you know, Tony gets Jack Perry, like, used on his contract without losing any money, can give back to New Japan Pro Wrestling when, you know, he basically hasn't given them much besides Moxley over the last couple of years and Danielson. So this is a cooperative. I like it. And like I said, It fucking sucks for Jack Perry, but make the best of it, man, because your future is bright and you do have a lot of potential. And, you know, right now, if you look at the landscape of New Japan Pro or AEW, there wasn't going to be much room for you anyways. Like, there's Okada, there's Ospreay, there's Jay White, there's, you know, Shibata now and Danielson and, you know, a tag tournament. There's so much going on that where were you going to be on the programming anyways? Copeland, Jay Riso, Christian, the whole deal. It's just like, hang out here. Somebody else is going to get in trouble and then come back.
Flaming Shark says, yeah, it makes sense that New Japan would be all for an AEW mid-carder with Big Heat in the U.S. if they don't have to foot the bill. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's, you know, there is that financial aspect of it as well, which came into play. It looks like they did spend some money on some of the folks that have been there.
I mean, even if it was just travel costs and they didn't have to pay, you know, like just get them over there and do the room and board, and then AEW pays them a salary or whatever. Fine. Great. I'm sure that they would do that.
Let's get to some of these other questions here. With Finlay seemingly back, it looks like he is. It looks like he was just ill for a little while. There had to go to the hospital, though, which is a little scary there. I hope he's okay. It sounds like he is. Do you think he'll go after the global title or the world title? Well, it looks like global, because I think the world title is about to be pretty tied up for a little bit there. And so I think it's going to be the global title. So we'll go into this. The global title right now is with Nick Nemeth. A match has been announced for Windy City Riot, new one, against Tomohiro Ishii. Now, when Chris Samsa was here a little while ago, he mentioned that he believed that Nemeth was on a four-match deal, and that match number three was going to be Tanahashi, which, of course, you know, he challenged for, got on the microphone, wanted Tanahashi, but then Tanahashi got hurt, couldn't do it. We assumed that he was going to beat Tanahashi and then either extend that deal further or give the title back and the fourth match, right? This makes sense as a Tanahashi replacement, is a guy he can have a really good match with and beat, right, and then move on to whoever's going to take back the global title. Or again, they could extend it and make the deal, whatever works out best for both parties. But this does feel like a plug and play where Ishii's been put back in for Nemeth to keep the title. I think Finlay is probably going to go chasing it after that, because again, the tea leaves on this one are Naito's facing in what, 6 days, Yota Tsuji at Sakura Genesis, then John Moxley at Windy City Riot. Doesn't look like there's a lot of room for Finlay to chase the world title at this moment.
No, not at the moment. But I have a lot of questions and thoughts about where we're going with that title match at Windy City. And
oh, yeah.
I think come Forbidden Door, I think the landscape of New Japan could be right back very close to where we are now, but Finlay having a different motivation. I just feel like the second half of the year, Finlay may be focused on the IWGP title. But I don't know who's going to have the IWGP title when that happens.
And we'll get to all that, but believe me. But Dunstan mentions here, do you think New Japan are building a feud with Bishamon versus Yuya and Taichi? I think that if they decide to put the titles back on Bishamon, because they are challenging Chase Owens and Kenta for the IWGP tag team titles after Owens and Kenta attacked Bishamon after the finals of the New Japan Cup in the backstage area. They beat him up there. And of course, both members of Bishamon got a win over those guys in the tournament. So, but they've also been kind of eyeing each other, the Just Five guys there, Taichi and Yuya. That's possible. If they decide to go with Bishamon as tag team champions, it would be a fresh match. I'm all for fresh matches. So I think that's possible. And those guys don't really have anything going right now. You need to rebuild Yuya. Taichi needs something. And I think that could be, that could be. And I think I would like to see that match.
There's some ambiguity as to who's going to be at Windy City and who's going to be in Taiwan 2 days later for that match. It's entirely possible that we could have a trios match or a six-man match between Bishamon and somebody else and Just Five guys. And it could be leading up to that in some type of bracket play for that one night tournament. I wouldn't totally rule that out, but since Bishamon has the tag match at Sakura Genesis, you're going to get through that first before they announce anything else. But it could be that trios tournament that they're kind of, if those two sets of individuals are due to lock up.
And then finally, he also mentions here, with Okada holding the Continental title, do you think he'll defend it against someone from Japan at Forbidden Door 3? Not necessarily, no. I think there are a lot of ways that could go, but I not necessarily. What's your thought on that? I'm not holding my breath on that.
I saw this question earlier. And if it were me, I'd keep Okada as far away from New Japan talent as much as possible.
It just would feel too soon. It would just feel, it wouldn't feel that special to have him back quite yet.
I got a guy that you could do if the visas are working, but I think you should do Okada versus Heshicero for the Continental title for Forbidden.
Ooh, okay. I'd watch that for sure. Dunstan asks, does Tongaloa seem out of place in New Japan to either of you? Looks a little lost. If they decide to do a trios run with him, which could be the case, that might be a good way to do it. ELP and Phantasmo are now lined up with TMDK. So that could be one that they could be moving away from those strong tag team titles, may have proven their point in holding them, so to speak, and move on to something else at that point. That would be my only thing with Tongaloa. I'm after what we have seen lately with him in singles, I'm almost worried that we'll see him in the G1 because it hasn't been great. So I'd almost rather have him in the never open weight six man ranks. I think that's probably a better place to for him. For us.
I understand that there's a loyalty to some of these wrestlers, and some of them are upping their game, like Chase Owens, that I want to compliment him here now for the work that he's doing to elevate himself when the opportunity has arisen. I don't know if it's injury. I don't know if it's rustiness. I don't know if he is just not that great of a wrestler. But of the opportunities that Tangaloa has had to exceed expectations in the last 6 months, he has not been able to do so, and it is a bummer for both him and both the audience.
All right. Let's see what other questions we have. It says, do you think Bushiroad aren't maximizing the Stardom New Japan relationship? Well, we talked a lot about that. I don't know that there is an opportunity like right now for that to come in. I mean, we had a title match recently with Mayu. We've seen some crossover with I think they're doing better, but I wouldn't anticipate seeing much more Stardom, maybe Dominion and perhaps Forbidden Door. That is a possibility for more Stardom New Japan crossover. We don't know about historic crossover. They haven't announced anything. Who knows what's going to happen? But under what they're doing now, where title match on a big show, or you know, bringing in the women to face the women from Mexico at Fantastica Mania and all that, I don't know that there would be a place for that until maybe perhaps Dominion. Jeremy, what do you think?
I feel like you have to temper your expectations and look for any real strong collaboration until after the G1.
There's not going to be a women's division in
it. There's
maybe Dominion.
I feel like if we saw glimmers of interaction at Dominion and at Forbidden Door and really set up a show in which, you know, threads from those matches, once the Stardom roster kind of settled after the last couple of months, I feel like Historic X Over 2 after the G1 is a really good time, because just up to this point, I feel like the pre-Dominion calendar is pretty much set. Then you're going to have G1. Look up.
They've been announced for Windy City Riot, and of course they have a big Stardom has a huge show coming over WrestleMania week.
No, I'm just saying like Stardom actually on New Japan shows, like on in Japan. That kind of thing that we're seeing, because you know, the Stardom and Ring of Honor cooperation is kind of happening exactly how I thought it would, where there's some people for Ring of Honor coming over and wrestling on that Stardom show, Willow and Mariah May. So you've got that going, and I kind of feel like it's going to be the other way around too. You know, some of those Stardom women might wrestle in the Ring of Honor show when we get closer to that date. So that's all there. It's all, you can't go 0-60 on this, you know. You need to set the tone, and then, you know, drop the hammer of the really cool stuff once you've kind of laid the groundwork, you know, kind of like how they slowly brought in Okada when he initially came in through Forbidden Door, rather than just like steamroll through. You earned that first like reveal.
Yeah. And you know, I don't think that we really need much more than a match at one match for the IWGP women's title at a big show. I don't really think or want a whole lot more than that. What I don't want, as a big Stardom fan, is for Stardom to look like the thing you have to do for a match or two on a New box Japan check. Show. Yeah, I don't want that. I want it to be the special thing where we've got an important match between two really good workers that we're going to put on a major show. That's how I want Stardom Showcase, not as something we've got to do. I don't want it to be like the hour and a half mark of Dynamite every week, where we have to do this women's match at the hour and a half mark before the main event. And I don't want that. I don't want that for Stardom. I don't want it for New Japan.
There has to be a motivation and a want and a desire to bring the best product, both by New Japan, Stardom, and Bushiroad, and everyone be on the same page. If people's hands are being forced in this, you are going to see it in terms of the time given and the effort put forth in these matches. And that doesn't benefit anybody.
So other news, we had Yo defeating Yoshinobu Kanemaru. And this one had a fun finish, by the way. I did like the finish of this one. There was an awful lot of House of Torture shenanigans on this tour. It was too much for me. But Yo did beat Kanemaru. Sho was up on the apron taunting Yo with the belt. Of course, we've had the whole thing with the belt being stolen and stolen back and snatched again. Yo went after him. Kanemaru took a shot of whiskey, but Yo punched him. He spit the whiskey in Sho's face. Sho's blinded. He drops the belt. Yo ends up hitting an O'Connor roll for the pin. So he wins the match. And then lo and behold, because Sho's blind, he doesn't realize he's dropped the belt on the apron, and he steals the belt back. So they have had 20 different ways for these guys to steal each other's title out here. We are finally going to get Sho versus Yo for this junior heavyweight championship. And at least that was fairly entertaining. So that's where one of the belts is going to go. We're headed towards Sho versus Yo.
Can you refresh my memory as to why Sho was basically gone? Did they just write it off as super injured from the Naito match?
No, they said that he was faking that. He was just like, I'm above all this, and I'm the champion. If I don't have a title match, I don't need to bother with you peons. Basically, was his attitude on that. And then I think they did that mostly to set up Sho running in here, so that when he did run in, it was just like, you know, he's being a bastard.
Like he ended up
just lying. I'm taking the rest of the tour off, except when I'm going to sneak attack somebody. You know, that type of thing.
Honestly, Jack Perry took his spot in House of Torture and just kind of like became Sho by proxy. And so, like, Sho, whatever. Well,
yeah, no, you're right. I'm enjoying it.
It was the plug and play that they normally do. So I'm just curious to see what the dynamic is now that Sho is back. And, you know, it was a clever way to write him off so that there wasn't exactly too much House of Torture all over the place, because everyone was already complaining that there was too much House of Torture. If there was one more guy in there with all that stuff, it's like, insufferable.
Dustin says, do you think the junior tag division needs some new blood? I mean, you know, yeah, but I feel like we've been saying that for years now.
Well, they got Kevin Knight and Kushida coming back.
And they addressed it. And that is good news, because what they're doing with that, and that's where that was my segue, because we were heading in to an idea where Catch 2-2 was saying we want to go back after Drilla Maloney, who seems to have re-signed, reading not particularly hard a lines to read between on his Twitter, but he does seem to have re-signed.
I have one for that one.
And Clark Connors. Oh, you have a slide? Okay, we'll take a look at it.
I believe I do.
And basically, while Catch 2-2 have been talking about it, there you go. Gabe Kidd has re-signed with New Japan as good. That's from Fightful Select. And then Tobey Maguire's black suit from Spider-Man 3 is currently on auction for $5,500. And Drilla Maloney writes, you won't know how much money I re-signed for, but there may be signs, he said, so, which is very funny. So, yeah, it looks like those guys are back, which is good news. But we'll have Connors and Maloney in a three-way match with Catch 2-2 and the Jet Setters. And the way they did this one was, after a match, Catch 2-2 has been talking about going after the titles. Mm-hmm. They're walking back, Catch 2-2, after their match. And all of a sudden, the lights go out. And a video from the Jet Setters come up, who just jumped the line and just said, you know, Connors and Maloney, we want you. Like, we haven't seen you guys in months. So Catch 2-2 is pissed. It's going to be a three-way match. So that's a little bit of an injection of new blood in that division, which has been a little stale. Heck, we barely had a junior tag division for a while, because between Maloney recovering from his injuries and people not being in Japan, those titles have been on ice for a little while the company does other things.
I got a question for you, Steven.
Okay,
what exactly is mystical about the Aslong? Is it, can it see the future? Clearly not. Is it telepathic? Can it read minds? Is there anything supernatural about this thing? in any way, shape, or
form. He seems to have very strong recovery powers. Like when he's Oswong, it seems to take a lot to keep him down than it does TJP.
That's all well and good, but I really feel like he should have seen the Kushida and Kevin Knight, the jet setters.
Are they supposed to play one?
Like the look of shock that he had on his face that this could possibly happen was, I don't know, man.
Are Oswald supposed to be clairvoyant? I don't know. I'm not up on my Oswald.
I feel like you should have had some kind of ability to see this coming. That's all.
Great. With Gabe and Drilla staying in New Japan, do you think that this means the company is now investing on talent to keep or bring in? Well, I think they want to keep. I don't know if they have a ton of money to bring in new people, but I do think they want to keep what they have. They certainly don't want to lose more.
Everyone is invested in having those five guys around, whether, you know, like they've got to be important to 2024. And who knows what's going on with Coughlin? Nobody's heard much from him. Hopefully he's just, you know, recuperating and coming back soon. But it seems like they got four out of the five guys right now, and that's good, right?
Yeah. So let's take a look at what else we have from this one. A lot of news coming out of this one in various ways here. John Moxley is coming back to Japan. He's going to be at Sakura Genesis. That has been announced now. So Shota Umino made a very vague, oddly vague challenge for Genesis after the tournament, saying that he got a text from someone who's been watching the House of Torture and they want to fight him. So certainly sounded like Mox, but he didn't say the name. Let me see what the match is. Let me make sure I get this right. The match at Sakura Genesis is going to be Shota and Mox against Jack Perry and Ren Narita. So interesting thing there.
Match. Not gonna lie.
I have a feeling that this could very well be John Moxley getting a win here and Umino getting a win, maybe on Narita instead of on Perry to keep that for Shota. But either way, I'm overthinking that. But my point being that Moxley's in Japan, he gets a win on the undercard. Then after perhaps a successful title defense from Tetsuya Naito or whoever wins the main event, there is a bit of a nose-to-nose in the ring afterwards with Mox. That's my tea leaf reading on that.
You mean to think that they brought Moxley in so that they could have footage of Moxley and Naito face-to-face before Windy City and their match?
Yeah.
It's like you're booking pro wrestling.
Mox just says, assuming Tsuji doesn't pull a big upset. Yeah, I mean, and you know, who knows, but
they haven't promised a title match for sure. And right. We get that.
I'd still be very surprised if that wasn't where they went with it.
They could absolutely have Tsuji win. It would blow me away. It would absolutely blow me away that they wouldn't have Moxley and Naito for the title, but
it would not blow me away if John Moxley wins the title.
It absolutely would not either. And in fact, I kind of think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it very well could. He might go into it as the G1 as the champion, or not even be in the G1, but be champion. That's all possible right there. I think that's very possible. You got to remember that I don't think Moxley has been pinned in New Japan yet. I don't think he has.
Not since like 2019 or whatever.
Oh no! Yes, pardon me. Not in a very long time, but he did when he was in the original G1 and all that. Of course, yeah, he lost some.
Here's my crazy ass fantasy booking idea: Moxley wins it, Finley beats Moxley for it down the line, and then Shota beats Finley for the IWGP title.
Holy mackerel! Look at that. Is Claudio and Yuta ringside to help? I don't know. That's not really their style. They don't like to, in Japan, they don't usually interfere for each other. And Flaming Shark says he expects Mox and Naito to be for the title. But it is a bit of a toss-up who wins it. I think that his next, it wouldn't be his first, but his next pinfall loss in New Japan would be a very big deal. Now,
it'd either be a title loss. Moxley's next loss should be over the title, and the title should be involved the next time Moxley loses.
And that could be Naito. I mean, they might put Naito over him. This is not me just saying he's definitely going to win this thing, but it's a real possibility. It's the most I have felt like Naito's title will be in jeopardy. I feel like there's better odds on Moxley winning it than Tsuji, for instance.
Yes, yes. Okay. There's a lot more excitement. I feel like it's a shot in the arm, and if Naito loses it to Moxley, there's no, like, there's no diminishment of Naito in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't matter to me if Moxley isn't going on every tour for New Japan at the time. You know, you're going to have the best of the Super Juniors. You might have a couple of weeks that he's going back and forth. And then you got Dominion and Forbidden Door. But if there's a time to do it and there's a guy to do it, this is the guy and this is the time. And I'm very much okay with it if they were going to do that.
Here's my thought on Moxley. You bring up a great point that it might be the right time to have somebody who's not there full time hold the belt because he doesn't necessarily have to be there anyway. But let's go over what we've seen in the last year with Naito in these preview tags that we've made fun of because we're so bored with them. And Okada, which Chris Samson mentioned that overall Kazuchika Okada had a losing record in New Japan because he lost so many absolutely meaningless multi-person tags in the undercard. Do you need the world champion except for the big shows? Need? I mean, it's nice to have.
Right now, you don't.
Yeah. And so my thought is if they have other things going on, it's always nice to have the world champ on the show for the house shows. It does bring people in. But there's not a huge difference between him not coming over and like if he comes over for Dominion and then comes over for something, and whether he wrestles in the G1 or not is another thing. But the fact that the world champion isn't in kind of mind-numbing, you know, t-shirt on preview tags in the middle to me doesn't make an enormous difference as long as he comes over for the big shows. And Mox has shown a clear willingness to fight off jet lag and rack up the air miles going back and forth from the US to Japan on short notice. He does not mind wrestling 2 days later in one continent on the other when most people would be on the fetal position crying for their bed. But Mox seems to be able to just handle it. So, yeah.
You know, do you remember the last time Moxley wrestled?
In New Japan?
At all.
Well, I'm woefully behind on my AEW. I apologize.
Okay. He hasn't wrestled since Revolution.
Oh, shoot. Really? Okay. Well, there you
go. He's been off of TV. You know, I'm a little behind because of the New Japan Cup and everything going on. But he's not in the tag tournament. He's not anywhere to be seen. They have kept him. I don't know if it's protected. I don't know if it's don't want him to lose, don't want him to be in a program. But he has been conspicuously absent from most major dealings when you got Okada and Ospreay and all these other guys. And I just find that very interesting right now.
Okay. Vankin mentions, I'm the biggest advocate that Shota needs to pin Mox. Yes, I think he does someday.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to happen someday. He said, if he wants to call himself the ace, he needs a big win. That's also very true. And Shark just mentions this, and this is what I'm talking about with the big shows. If I could see Mox doing Duntaku, Resurgence, Dominion, Forbidden Door, or if New Japan can get him for G1, maybe further, Mox winning the title.
You know what the title match of Dominion should be, right? Moxley versus Shota.
How are you going to get Shota there? That's interesting. I mean, I'm not saying no, but how do you get Shota there?
You can do anything. Shota isn't going to win. But having Moxley versus Shota when Moxley gets to pick his challenger kind of thing after his first title defense, something like that. And he just says, Shota, it's your time. And then like Moxley beats the piss out of him or whatever, or comes close or whatever. But it sets up Shota for that like positioning, just like Yoda, to have that world title against that mentor figure of him, much like Yuta is going to have that match against Naito.
Yeah, absolutely. Yoda Tsuji, by the way. No, that's fine. Vankin just says, do you think there's going to be a Mox NJPW tour? A little more challenging there for a long tour, just because he has such AEW responsibilities. But if anyone can, I mean, he could. But again, I'm not sure that they're going to send him to the sticks.
He may do a couple of shows near the best of the Super Juniors final. You know, the final is at Dominion, so you can do a couple of shows leading up to it.
It would pop the crowd. Have him on the tour. Yeah, pop the crowd. They love it. I mean, they love him there. Man, they absolutely love him. And gearing up for a New Japan run would be fun, he says. Yeah, probably would
absolutely.
Be.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Are there any other questions I want to get to here before we move? Let's see. No, I think we covered most of it. Dunson says, I think New Japan could have given Shota the Never title and have him proper run. Yep, that's what we talked about a few weeks ago here, that he could have beaten Evil and this all would have been Just as interesting. But okay, let's talk about what else is coming out of this thing. So Hiromu also mentioned the Impact Wrestling, TNA Wrestling, I guess it is. Pardon me. I'm still getting used to that. TNA X Division title. So it's not announced as a title match with Ali, but he mentioned the belt. I thought that was interesting. That could be a thing. And then apparently there's going to be a press conference tomorrow, Be Still Our Beating Hearts, where we find out what the stipulations might be for a Tongaloa Great Okan King of Pro Wrestling match. I know, Jeremy, you're setting your alarm so you could be up at 4 a.m. to watch that live.
I'm so excited. Let's see. Do I have graphics for this one? I think I do.
No, you don't.
I think I have graphics for this. Do I?
Holy mackerel.
Woo!
Oh, yeah. All right. There it is. Okay.
Our dream has come true. What do you think? Strikes and commissions only?
Oh, God. I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. What they really haven't set up anything. Other King of Pro Wrestling feuds, you had a sense of where someone was going with it. You know, and I don't for this one. I don't know what Okan basically just said. Tell me what you think. He didn't offer any of his own. And I don't know where Tongaloa's head is on it. So I just don't know.
Like it's fun and it's fine. I'm glad this is on the 31st and not on the Sakura Genesis card. Mm. I feel like they read the room correctly on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's just if we do anything less than sing the praises of this match, I will be unsurprised.
Okay.
You know, it's like, I expect this match to not be very good, unfortunately. So if we come back here and say it was very good, I'm not gonna make any bets or anything like that, but I will definitely feel like I benefited from a good match.
I'm looking at that Corican Hall Road to Sakura Genesis. Oh, on April 3rd. Oh, so the it's going to be on the 31st, you said.
It is on the 31st, yes.
Got it. Okay.
It is the main event of the 31st with a number of multi-man.
It's in Shizuoka. Okay. Yes. So is that even going to be on NJPW World?
I don't
know. Not all of these shows are.
No, they have a number of shows, but I was trying to find before we got on here, like what to watch in March. Hmm. And I think maybe the 31st, but there's a couple of other shows on there that I'm not sure.
You know, as I'm looking at it right now on NJPW World and their schedule, and as it is right now, the next show on World will be that's the live schedule. So I don't know if they'd put it up later, but Road to Sakura Genesis on the 3rd, the Corican Hall show.
Okay, so the April 3rd one is the one I thought it was going to be the next one that we have live.
Yeah, that seems to be the next one, but it doesn't. I mean, I guess they might put it up on a delay, or it might just be on the YouTube. They said it would be, right?
Yeah, we're about to go about 2 weeks without any real New Japan content going into our 100th episode.
Yeah, go figure. That's all right. We'll see what they do with it.
Speaking of which, we have a 100th coming up, but we've decided that we are going to do a Windy City post show on New Japan. And we have a guest booked for that show. And so after the Windy City Riot on that Friday night, you can come check out Speaking of Strong Styles. We'll unpack everything that happened here on the Fight Game Media YouTube.
All right. Very cool. And let's go back a little bit in this tournament and look at how we got to where we are. We had the week began for us. Of course, we do the show on Thursday, so that's where we pick up. On the 15th in Osaka, the two matches there were El Fantasmo and Yota Tsuji. That was a win for Tsuji and a pretty good match. I like that it was ELP using his speed and his dives versus Tsuji's explosiveness. And ELP actually did not succumb to the Gene Blast. He leapfrogged a Gene Blast attempt, but Tsuji kicked out of the CR2 and he hit a jump up curb stomp from the ropes to ELP to beat him. So he hopped up on the ropes, came down with a curb stomp and pinned him that way, which set up a spot in the finals where he used that move on Goto, but couldn't quite get the victory. This was a pretty good match and laid a little bit of groundwork for a spot they were going to do in the finals, which tells me that Tsuji was definitely going to the finals from the very beginning, which we expect. I don't know if he was going to try to stop Goto or Finlay, but nevertheless, that was
the one thing. The one thing I will compliment New Japan on is that they have slowed the roll on the Reiwa so much that they have managed to convince everyone that they were never going to do anything with these guys. And so they kind of managed to fool a number of people that this wasn't going to be Yoda's time. And I'm glad to be wrong.
Yeah, and we'll see how this goes with it. There's still some questions I have on this one. But overall, I am happy that he got the win over Uemura, kept his hair. He embarrassed Uemura a little bit, and now they're keeping the momentum going, which was our argument with Shoto Mino, that he keeps getting cut off, and Narita stuck in a gimmick with HOT, and Uemura cut off, Finlay cut off. This is at least progression forward. Ren Narita and Zack Sabre Jr., this is the one. We weren't sure where this one was going to go. We thought Zack was going to go a little bit further, but they decided to really lay on more heat. House of Torture shenanigans. Mikey Nichols tried to help him. It was too much. There aren't very many Zack Sabre Jr. matches that are just okay, but House of Torture managed to get an okay match out of Zack Sabre, which is a challenge.
You know, it basically came down to if Zack Sabre Jr. is not going to win this tournament, how do you get him out of it? And that was basically the story of this match. And I feel like they are saving Yota Tsuji versus Zack Sabre Jr. for down the line. I am glad they're saving it for down the line, because I feel like if we had gotten it now, we would have been bummed we didn't get it later. Because I feel like after Yota Tsuji had this tournament, he is going to have a better match with Zack Sabre Jr.
I still feel like they're going to push Finlay, but if you ask me right now today, and it's the same as I've been saying, I guess, since January, but if I had to lay money on who top Gaijin is at the end of this year, it's Zach and not Finlay. So I think that they still take Zach didn't need to win this tournament and all, but I still think that they have very big plans for him.
Absolutely. He is my favorite to win the G1, but that's just a sentimental favorite. It's an open field for the G1, but after I saw that match, after a number of matches at the beginning of the year, I'm like, this dude is the wrestler. This is his time right now.
Yeah, Venkin says Zach is levels above Finlay. Yes, certainly as a wrestler, Zach is levels above almost everybody. I'm just talking about in terms of push. I still think that he's actually going to be pushed as the top Gaijin and not Finlay as well.
As the top babyface Gaijin and Finlay as the top heel Gaijin. And yeah, then you can do that. You've got top heel and face both in Japan, like native Japan. So
with
like
Moxley as a special attraction Gaijin type of thing.
Yeah. Like there's a real possibility that Moxley and Shota could be a heel and face dynamic by the end of the year as well, where Moxley is not Shota's friend.
Yeah, that's very true. On the 16th in Aichi, that was the night we learned that Finlay had withdrawn from the tournament with an illness. So we only had the one tournament match. It was Jack Perry against Sonata. Perry attacked before the match to crickets chirping. Sonata's comeback got a little bit of noise out of the crowd, but there was all kinds of bad refs. At various points in this tournament, a referee was knocked out by being grabbed during an O'Connor roll and rolling onto his back. They take bigger bumps when they jump to count one. And then another time, giving a magic killer unintentionally can apparently knock a referee out. Again, my point about the House of Torture stuff isn't that they do it, it's that they do it really badly. And like somehow these things injure referees, and it just looks bad. It makes everybody look dumb. But there's a whole thing with there was a moonsault, Narita pulled out the ref. Why the hell isn't that a disqualification if somebody just yanks the referee out of the ring? And it's just so stupid. This time, Sonata managed to come back, hit an O'Connor roll to win. It wasn't great, but it got Sonata moving on to the quarter. And that took us to the quarterfinals in Shizuoka. Any final thoughts on this one? I'm so burned out on some of the House of Torture stuff. Again, I understand why they do it. I understand you got to put the heels over and you got to get heat. My argument is they do it poorly.
I am going to read you the quote that Jack Perry had after this match.
Yeah,
because while the match was whatever, this was the outcome I kind of thought, in that Sonata was going to be the gatekeeper obstacle. Eventually, Jack Perry is going to beat Sonata, and parts of the world will rejoice. But for now, we're back to where we needed to be. So backstage, Jack Perry spitting, cursing on the ground. I bet you're all just over the moon right now because you think you hate me because of some shit you don't even know the half of. I've never had to look far to find people telling me all the reasons why I won't succeed. But
Jack Perry. I'm sure the odds have been stacked against Jack Perry his whole life. God damn.
The best Dylan McKay like monologue you'll ever see. But yet again, I find myself in one of the top professional wrestling companies in the planet.
It's tough to be him, but
come get close. You on your phone right now. If you put as much pressure on yourself as you do me, then maybe your life wouldn't be so mediocre and forgettable. Maybe you wouldn't be just a sheep waiting to follow someone off a cliff. I'm out of the cup. I didn't win it, but my business in New Japan is far from over. How did I do?
That was pretty good. And it was a good promo. Jack did well in that. And again, playing that chip on the shoulder, which does have that little kernel of truth within it, is going to pay dividends because it is coming off as authentic. And so we'll see how his performance goes in the ring. Hasn't been too bad so far. But again, House Torture, you know, there's a lot of BS in there. And you know, I know that yanking out the ref is never, but my point is, why the hell isn't it? and why do these referees are suddenly devastated by being grabbed and pulled to their down? It's just, it's not done well. And I don't keep beating the drum on this, but it that's my issue with it. If you came up with something that looked good, I'd be okay with it, but they just do it so half-assed and so poorly that it takes me out of it.
If they had a different schtick, that you're like, okay, I can get behind this. But what they're doing, it's just like, it's X-Pac heat. You're done with it.
And the stuff like the ringing of the bell and the submission hold, when it makes the baby face look so stupid. Oh, another one happened too. I don't understand that. Like the referee was counting 1, 2, and then someone rang the bell and he stopped counting and looked around. I'm just like, what?
Like, why wouldn't you just keep ringing? Like, oh, they got the tango and then they'll hit the three.
Just like, come up with something.
Does a bell incapacitate someone from potentially kicking out?
Yeah.
That's all.
Moving on. Okay, so let's see. All right. So we're Yoda Tsuji versus Ren Narita. Now, you want to talk about an overbooked mess. Good Lord. This went even bled into the next match. So Yoda Tsuji, Ren Narita. Refs
that was clever, by the way.
The refs were bumped like crazy. Run-ins, weapons, every ref was brought in and knocked down. Bushi and Hiromu were running around out there trying to help Yoda out there. And then, of course, Shingo was in the next match. Naito staying out of it, as always. Narita went for a low blow, tried a double cross. That was countered into a victory roll by Tsuji for the win. So there you go. All right, now Narita's out. Post-match beat down by House of Torture brings Evil out to join in the beating. That brings Shingo out. And so the referee said, hey, we got both guys. Why don't we just have the match now? So they go right into the match between Shingo and Evil. More bumps. Basically about the same thing that happened in the first one. They just did it all over again. This time, however, Bushi tried to mist Evil and got Shingo. He got whiskey spit in his face. He got powder thrown in his eyes by Dick Togo. Everything is Evil to win. This was the coverall in the bingo card. If you have the House of Torture bingo card, this was the end of the night coverall. If there are any bingo fans out there, you know what I'm talking about. This was way too much, but at least it's over now.
I thought they did something pretty clever on the match listings for this. They combined match 7 and 8 into one block. So whereas everything else, this, the entire segment from Ren coming out all the way to the end of the next match is all one segment. So it's not like the match didn't happen and you're like, you can't find it. You got to watch the whole thing from start to finish because it's all one big segment.
And then Flaming Shark mentions, I love the Jack Perry character. It's the type of heel character that people don't actually like to cheer, and he's playing it well. Yeah, a lot of people try to be a cool heel. He's not trying to do that, that's for sure. It feels believable, and of course he hangs with the house. And he said this tournament did have never ending House of Torture. Like, holy moly, New Japan. I don't hate him as much as most.
I'm with, man, you, Shark. I'm fine with it. Like, I,
three times a night.
I'm fine. I don't have a problem with it. Like, I really, like, I understand and I validate everyone that's losing their minds. There are times where I get exasperated, but on the whole, I've just been like, okay, this is the cast of characters. This is who we're operating with. Sometimes they're going to have to look strong. So when they get their ass kicked, it's incredibly validating. They have to look strong a lot. They have to look shitty strong a lot. It does suck, but it's pro wrestling.
Yeah, I just don't know if we need it three times on the card every single time. Venkin says, you know how much they're going to cheer Shota in Chicago, though. Yep, he's going to be over. He is going to be over. He'll do well there. All right, so that was that. And
well,
then,
if Mox wins and Shota comes out afterwards to confront him for the title, that's how you get to Dominion.
That'd be a biggie. Yota Tsuji against Evil was, here's the semifinals in Fukushima. So that was on the 18th. This was what finally finished off House of Torture from the tournament anyway. The match barely began when Marty was knocked down. Big brawl with both groups, the LIJ group and House of Torture, and the match was declared a no contest. We're not having the semifinals. But we knew that wasn't going to happen. So they restarted it after a quick Tsuji promo. And same old, same old. Ref bumps, run-ins, blah, 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 blah. But in the end, this time LIJ got the best of it. Evil took Hiromu's super kick. He took Shingo's pumping bomber. That was the key moment in it, wasn't it? Finally, while House of Torture had the best of it, Shingo Takagi actually came out. Naito never helps anybody, or very rarely does. I shouldn't say never. He has before, but not in this case. Shingo came down, clean house on everyone. Pumping bomber, took the mist in the eyes. Basically, all the LIJ guys that were out there got something in on Evil. And Gene Blast for the victory. The crowd was very happy.
They flipped the dynamic, but we still ended up getting Shingo versus Evil. At Sakura Genesis, just like we thought.
Yeah, okay. Sanada versus Goto was next. And this was another one that the crowd was supportive of Goto without turning on Sanada. They were respectful of both. Sanada hit a pile driver on the floor about 5 minutes in, and it changed the tone of the match in a good way. I mean, like, all of a sudden the crowd was like, oh, this is serious. Okay. Also, Goto used an Ushigoroshi really early, and it made the crowd think maybe they're going short. They didn't. But I like that it added that little tension, because you had a pile driver on the floor and Ushigoroshi in the first 10 minutes. And I think, like, the crowd had a little buzz to it. Like, we might only go 12 here. You know, like, this might end any time. Added a little tension to it. There was a backslide by Sonata into an O'Connor roll that was great for a near fall. And that was after a long skull end thing. Finally, Goto, though, got his momentum up. Death Valley GTR out of a deadfall attempt, and then a GTR proper to win it. This was a really good performance by both guys, yes. I felt like. And this was a really good version of Sanada. Goto is an excellent wrestler. There's no question about that. But good feelings all around here, and it set up the finals.
Yeah, no, I was pleased with this. One of the beats of this tournament that I always felt very strongly was that Sanada was going to lose in the semifinals. Because he won the tournament the year before. He had to look strong. No. But after two title matches in January and February, we're all going to lose our minds if we were going to have even teasing another title match for him. So it makes sense that Finley was originally supposed to beat Sonata in this match to mirror the match from last year to get us to where we needed to be. With that said, I cannot stress enough what a great job Hiroki Goto has done stepping into the role that he needed to for this tournament to elevate it beyond mediocre with the work that he did near the finals of his competition.
Yeah, and they needed to pull something out because this was going to be considered a pretty mediocre tournament going into the semifinals. I would say, like, coming out of the quarterfinals, I think the semifinals a little bit better, and then quarterfinals. So, moving forward, we have some days off, but the team is back in action on March 30th. Here is where we have some house shows. Now, these will not be on NJPW World, all of them anyway. We will have Toyama, Shizuoka. They'll be in April 3rd, Tokyo, Korakuen Hall. which is the only one right now listed as being on NJPW World. That's April 3rd. And then they'll go to Ibaraki for a house show before the big one at Sakura Genesis Sumo Hall. So let's take a look at that. What do you think, the Korakuen Hall show first here, Jeremy? Go in order.
What day? On the 3rd?
Yes, on April 3rd. So we'll look at the main matches on this one. There are some previews for sure. A couple things I thought were interesting. Desperado and Yoshihashi against Ishimori and Chase Owens.
Okay.
I thought that's kind of a interesting little mix there. And then there's a gauntlet match, which is intriguing. It's a trio's gauntlet. And what we will have is Kevin Knight, Kushida, and Tomohiro Ishii. So again, Ishii teaming with Hantai, which again isn't unusual, except that he's been very verbal about how he's going to be working with Hantai, maybe more than Chaos. There, he's going to be, so that trio will face Callum Newman and Catch 2-2.
Super weird match.
Akira and TJP. The winner of that will go on to face Clark Connors, Drilla Maloney, and Ghetto.
Right afterwards, in a gauntlet match. This is like they're going to wait another night. This is going to happen like right afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay. Weird. Sure.
This is weird. Fifth match will be a 30-minute time limit. That is going to be Shingo Takagi against Yoshinobu Kanemaru. Okay. I guess just so Shingo can beat the living shit out of him.
Oh, and, he's gonna take a whiskey bottle to the face and get blinded 2 minutes into the match.
I can only imagine the tricks that Kanemaru will be up to in order to make this one look good. But Shingo's a great wrestler. I bet he actually has a pretty good match. I mean, they're both terrific wrestlers. It's just an interesting matchup considering the current gimmicks. And you also have Yo and Shota Umino against Sho and Ren Narita. And that's the semifinal. And the final is an intriguing tag match because we got to do previews for Sakura Genesis. We're getting Naito and Hiromu versus Bushi and Yota Tsuji. Now, I don't like Bushi's chances in this match, but it is interesting to see LIJ versus LIJ.
So, yeah, I am. It'd be a weird one too. What is going on here?
Bankin said, "Is a Ghetto? Is that his fourth match this year? I think he's had a lot of matches at the house shows. Ghetto's been wrestling and getting beat quite a bit."
But, so Jack Perry's off the tour now until Genesis, and then he flies in for Genesis with Moxley.
I guess
and
so.
Then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's back for Windy City. So he's not going to be. I can't see him being in the best of Super Juniors. Like he's been booked as a heavyweight.
Yeah, you know? No, I don't think that's the right spot for him either. What are you doing in there? You
know, absolutely.
So, again, he shouldn't be doing many jobs. I don't think he should be in a. He shouldn't be doing many.
This
jobs.
Was the some, question that I had though. Was like exactly how many tours is this guy going to be on? You've got the cup. He's doing Genesis. He'll do Windy City, and then there's a lot of ambiguity about exactly where he's going to be and what his position and his role is going to be between the two companies.
Yeah, this is the whole thing with Perry. This is all leading to a Shota Umino match, and we don't know past that.
If Jack Perry wins the match in Chicago, then he's going to be around a while.
Right.
If he loses, he could still be around a while, but it feels a lot more like you're closing the chapter on this era of the House of Torture Perry.
Yeah. All right, so let's take a look at Sakura Genesis then. So this is on Saturday, April 6th, Ryogoku Kukuji-kan. It'll be, again, Kosei Fujita back, teaming with Zack Sabre Jr. against Taguchi and El Desperado. Right now we also have Bushi and Hiromu against Ghetto and David Finlay.
This is the match that made me think that Finlay was always supposed to go to the finals. Because why would you have him against LIJ members unless he lost to an LIJ member at some point?
Yeah, that's very possible. I just think that, I think they wanted a good versus evil dynamic. It just so happened that they had somebody who was a sympathetic figure there that could, where it worked. And like I said, probably a better wrestling match, really. There was somebody with his experience walking Tsuji through all that.
The other thing that I'm going to throw out about this is they have advertised this match. There's absolutely no guarantee that this match actually happens at this point.
The Finlay match?
Yeah.
Okay. You know that he's recovered?
They haven't said anything.
Okay.
Nobody said anything about Finlay. They have booked this match, but we had Hanare pulled from a number of matches before the thing. It's like, they have booked this. but there is a possibility that he is not on the card.
It all depends on his health, and I'm hoping he's there because I want him to be okay.
And I want him to be okay too, but in the interest of responsibility based off of knowledge that we have right now, it is more than a minute possibility.
Okay. And then there's a six-man tag. This is Doki, Uemura, and Sanada against Newman, Okan, and Cobb. So that's the other thing. TJP has apparently been deemed the captain of United Empire by Will Ospreay. That's some of the talk that's been going around in the backstage comments and on commentary. Walker Stewart and Gino Gambino were terrific on this tour.
Fantastic.
And they mentioned that. And it seems like Jeff Cobb and Great O'Conn have bristled a little bit at that idea that this is more of a cooperative and things. So there may be a story that is coming eventually. It doesn't have to be now. But a story coming eventually about who actually the UE leader is. It seems like TGP thinks it's him, and maybe some of the other members aren't nearly as convinced. And Venkin's asking, has NRI wrestled after that match? Nope, haven't seen him since. When you have a damage to your artery, that's not something to toy with. So hopefully he is recovering fully before he even begins to work out again, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I feel like 2024, we're going to be seeing a little bit more of a civil dissolution rather than a civil war in United Empire.
And Shark says Finlay and Tsuji are two of the guys who've been pushing as the future, so that reason alone makes a lot of sense for the finals. We think so too. So Genesis also, we have a three-way match for the junior heavyweight tag team title. So Drill Maloney back and Clark Connors back. That's good. Against Kevin Knight and Kushida and Francesco Akira and TJP. So coming off that weird-ass gauntlet match, we'll have this. And so then we also have the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Chase Owens and Kenta defending against Bishamon. That's where we're going to get that one. So Goto and Yoshihashi back in it. I also noticed that Yoshihashi was kind of eyeing that Defy title.
Yes, he was.
And then we have a junior heavyweight title match, Sho versus Yo. The special tag match, Shota Umino and John Moxley against Jack Perry and Ren Narita. The never open weight match with Shingo Takagi versus Evil. And of course, both of them basically took each other out of the New Japan Cup. Evil, of course, cheated like the blazes to get Takagi out. Takagi ended up upending Evil. So these two are pissed at each other and ready to go at it again. And then Naito versus Yota Tsuji. That is coming up on the 6th of April.
That could be a hell of a card.
I looked at the ticket situation, by the way, for Genesis, and they seem to be going briskly. The Royal Seats, which are the real front, those are gone. Arena A in the chairs sold out. There are a couple other sections of box seats that are sold out. So this seems to be doing all right. Seems to be doing all right.
I feel like they are doing their best to kind of get the Super Junior division going with all six of these guys, and that's going to lay some groundwork for titles. I don't see those titles changing before the tournament for whatever reason. Hmm. You know, with Connors and Maloney basically not doing anything since the cage match and rehabbing / whatever, you know, they kind of need to reestablish dominance in the division, and I feel like this is a good match to do that rather than, you know, musical chairs the title.
It's a good way to keep some gold with the War Dogs right now. They know they're a little light on that. And especially if Chase Owens and Kenta drop the titles to Bishop, I'm not saying they are, but you know, I feel like one of those two teams will walk out with the belts and one won't, is basically how I kind of figure it. But that's one way to do it. The junior tag titles have a history of bouncing around a lot. So they don't necessarily have a lot of dominant reigns there either. And
I don't see a whole lot of title changes on Sakura Genesis, in all honesty. Maybe no, one.
But it looks like a good card. I think the matches are going to be pretty good.
I came into this show today in a fantastic mood because of what I've seen on New Japan and what was coming up in New Japan. In addition to like X-Men 97 and a bunch of other stuff that's coming out, just put me in a delightful mood. But with that being said, the New Japan aspect of everything, you know, after the food has felt a little stale for a while, this feels fresh, is the best way I can put it.
So let's take a look, and we're going to get some more comments to finish off. But we want to look at Windy City Riot because we have some more information about there. We have more matches announced. Now, there are still more wrestlers who are we know are going to be there but don't have matches yet, but this is what we know. The Riot Rules tag team match. This is Eddie Kingston on one side, Gabe Kidd on the other. Each will have three partners. We will not know who those partners are until the match. It's a, basically a mystery vortex right. match, except for the captain. So eight-man tag, tornado. This will be the chaos thing. We're just going to probably rumble all over the building here with these eight, but we don't know who they are. And then there is Shota Umino versus Jack Perry, finally getting that special singles match. And then there will be another special singles match, and it's listed as a special singles match, not a global title match. Nick Nemeth against Tomohiro Ishii. I think that's interesting. Is there any reason why this wouldn't be a title match?
Perhaps because he's already committed a title match to Tanahashi and it's just postponed.
Yes, I'm not sure we're going to get that. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes.
I think we'll eventually get the Tanahashi match, even if it's like on one of the Super Junior shows or whatever, or even if it's on TNA and Tanahashi. I think the match is going to happen. It's just, you know, they can't wait forever, and they don't, I don't know. It just feels like they promised the Tanahashi title match, so they're going to give you another match on the way.
We also have a strong openweight tag team championship open challenge. So Phantasmo and Hikuleo have open it up to any three teams that want to challenge them for the titles. We'll see. Right now, it's just a bunch of silhouettes and X's there for the team for Phantasmo and Hikuleo. We'll see who ends up joining them in that match. We will have a singles match between Mustafa Ali and Hiromu Takahashi that may or may not be for the X Division title, and a singles match between John Moxley and Tetsuya Naito that may or may not be for the IWGP Heavyweight World Heavyweight Championship. So that is shaping up a Windy City Riot.
Let's see. Is that all the matches? I feel like there was one more. Did we get it all? You got it all. You
got
it
all. That was officially on the 1972.
You got it all. I feel like I've had a Windy City Riot in my mind trying to keep track of all these matches that have or have not been announced. Do you see what I did there?
Pew, pew. I did. Venkin has a little prediction. I'll bring it up here. He said, wild call here. He said, but Eddie has Ospreay as a partner.
No.
He says, remember Battle in the Valley is his backup for that. We'll see. I'd be shocked.
That's the best way to put this. Tony Khan really likes Will Ospreay as his shiny new toy, and he's not going to share his shiny new toy with anybody, especially the people that had the shiny toy before him, because he already had, he had to share it now, and now he doesn't have to share it. I don't see Will Ospreay at Windy City. I would love to be wrong, but going 9 days before a big match with Bryan Danielson, I just feel like it would be cooler to think of rather than in reality actually happening. And I would temper my expectations.
Another question for Dunstan here. If the cup was a test of the talent pool they have for the G1, he thinks they would need to drop it back to 20. There's not enough stars or big matches to have four brackets. The G1 was a little clunky last year with four brackets. I wouldn't mind if they pared it back down. I don't anticipate them doing so.
Four brackets of eight.
Well, my offer here, my counter offer to your offer is if they have some sort of Noah presence again, a guest, which they could absolutely do. And the other thing side to that would be maybe CMLL.
Yes, absolutely.
Come over. Again, that visa issue that affects them coming to the United States does not apply to their issues, to any issues in Japan. That issue is a United States-centric visa issue, would not keep any CMLL talent from coming over to New Japan. I would love to see that. La Sombra, Andrade, has been in the G1 before. And so they have had CMLL guys. It's just a matter of what guy CMLL is willing to let come over for 3 weeks or for a month, you know, because that's a long tour, and CMLL runs weekly. So... but yeah, there are, and Shark thinks that we'll probably be seeing some guests in there as well. I think that might be a way to fill out that card without signing a whole bunch of people to full year contracts that could make the G1 tour a little more interesting, add a little spice without committing to a huge financial layout for a whole bunch of new people. So
I'm definitely thinking that if they can pull off the way that they did it last year, they're probably going to do it something similar to that. I felt like A and B bracket together and C and D bracket, there was some uniformity that just kind of, it was easy to track everything.
All right. And Shark mentioned this earlier. Forbidden Door 3 seems an opportunity for Mercedes to wrestle another Stardom girl if she wants to wrestle. This is when we were talking about when Stardom talent might be coming over. I think that's a smart comment. I think that's a real possibility. I do think Mercedes has unfinished business with Stardom. I think she really wants to work some of those women. The question is, are some of the women she wants to work still working for Stardom? Because, it's getting toward the end of March, and we might see some departures from Stardom. We know we're getting one for sure, obviously, Julia. We never did get that Mercedes-Julia match. Damn it all. But who knows? There are a lot of rumors about other women in Stardom that may or may not go off with Rossi Ogawa. So by the time Forbidden Door 3 comes around, there will certainly be a ton of talent in Stardom. No question about that. It's just
there's no way I could possibly predict who Mercedes' opponent would be by that point. The opinion on Mercedes is going to be insane by the time Forbidden Door comes around.
And Vankins says Utami is gone. It doesn't look good for Utami staying in Stardom. And then she says, can we make Azumi the leader fast? Well, that's who I'd pick. But I don't know what Bushiroad will pick. You know, Taro Okada is the current guy in charge there. But we'll have to see how Forbidden Door goes. Well, like you said, they're predicting that now is like predicting the weather in 5 years. Good luck. I mean, you have some information, but not nearly enough to make an accurate call right there. Twuan Max said the Scott E Wrestling put out, that's Scott Edwards, who joins us frequently, put out a tweet where he named four other women who are leaving to join Rossi. And Mirai, Julia, Mai Sakurai, and Yuzuki. Oh, Yuzuki. Boy, that's a big loss. It's a real feat. Mirai, yeah. But Julia, Mai Sakurai, Mai Sakurai has basically been in limbo all year because she never joined another faction. So, I have a feeling that's not a big shock to the company.
And Tokyo Sports adds that Utami Hayashishida isn't interested in going abroad, but wants to stay working in Japan.
Okay. Well, there you have it. She did come over. Utami came over a little bit, worked for GCW, and stopped over at the Performance Center. But that's a big difference between doing that and working anywhere regularly.
Yeah. Yeah. Wildness. So
not a big Mirai fan, Tuan. It feels like something's missing with her.
Back and forth. I'm a big fan. I'm not so much. Big fan, not so much.
Oh, see, Colin. Colin's a big Mirai fan. So I guess, there you go. Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? But, there's just an intangible about Mirai. It's just not quite there with me. But that could be just me. I could always be wrong. So, that's where we are. So next week, we're going to be talking about more of this, and we'll have more news on these cards as they develop. So we'll do more of a preview next week as we approach Sakura Genesis. So lots to come for sure. We know we're going to learn
a lot more about this. We got a bunch of information to unpack by next week.
Well, I think we were going to. I think there are going to be quite a few announcements, and we'll know more about Windy City Riot. Again, we're getting into that little kayfabe thing that New Japan does where we can start to put some things in writing. Yes. Not all of it, but certainly the Tsuji thing will keep the Moxley Naito one in a little bit of limbo, but we'll know a lot more next week, I think. And we'll be right here to talk about it and any other news that comes along. So any other thoughts for you, Jeremy, on this time, what we've got going on, what's coming up?
You know, I do have one thing, Steven, that I forgot to mention this entire time today. You know what that is?
Yeah.
We are members of the Fight Game Media Network. And we are on the YouTube channel alongside the Dynamite Show, Five Star Joshi Show, and Power Bomb Shows. Power Bomb Shows is every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Yeah. Dynamite Shows immediately following AEW Dynamite. And speaking of Strong Style, you can find every 5:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, where we talk all things New Japan. In addition to the audio network, please like, subscribe, share, click, do all the things that you can to spread the gospel if you like what we do here. We also have our own dedicated audio feed on all major podcatchers. So if you look up Speaking of Strong Style and you, in fact, like what we do, please share, like, and subscribe. And tell all the major wrestlers and all the people that New Japan, Speak of Strong Style of your favorite New Japan podcast, if that happens to be true. And if it doesn't, please tell them anyways, because that sounds good to me.
All right. So we'll be signing off here in just a little bit. But we're, like, the Stardom stuff is worth mentioning because these are people that may have had something to do, especially Utami Hayashita, who would be in the picture, the red, who is frequently in the top belt picture, and somebody who might have been in the IWGP title picture there. As Shark just mentioned, she's the main one. Utami is the one, Jeremy. She was, it's a little stretch to call her a child star. She was on television as a kid. She was part of the Big Daddy series. You know about this?
I don't.
Okay. So,
but I'm all creeped out by child stardom right now.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, her father and mother had a lot of children. I don't remember exactly how many. Someone will probably put it in the comments in about 2 seconds, but a lot of kids. And there was a reality show that followed around the Hayashita family. And it was called, it translates to Big Daddy, because he just has all these, he's a big family. And how, and it was mostly about the parents and how they navigated all this life. But Utami was one of these kids in this family. So she was on national television through a lot of her childhood. So she had a bit of a name before she even got into pro wrestling. And then once she got into pro wrestling, she was pushed by Rossi Ogawa as a super rookie, won everything in the world, steamrolled. And of course, you know, her loyalty ended up being to him. So just like Julia, she seems to be on the way out the door with Stardom, heading to Rossi Ogawa's new promotion. But she has been a main event player most of the time that she's been in the company. And, you know, that's one that's going to be a rough blow for that. And it means, right, that we won't be seeing her. She, of course, did team with, she teamed with Tanahashi against Hirooki Goto and Micah, I believe, on the historic crossover show. So she was in a featured match there. And the one that Colin mentions is this: Yuzuki is a rookie and looks like she's going to be a future ace, just really coming along great. But she just got there and she's gone, and barely knew life without Bushiroad. So, and then Colin just says, "Are we sure Rossi's company will get a TV deal?" No, we're not sure at all. We have no idea. I think a streaming service is far more likely. I mean, Stardom doesn't have a TV deal. So, but will he get a streaming deal? Well, there are possibilities for that. Could they create their own service? Maybe. Or join, what's it, Wrestle Universe or anything. There are a lot of things that are possible out there, but who knows? And Venkin Renson said Utami Micah was very good. Yeah, well, and they're both terrific wrestlers. So Rossi, it does appear, has a bit of a base going. He'll have Julia, who's a star, Utami, who is a star and has a mainstream name to her, so that's very beneficial. He has Yuzuki, apparently, who's a super rookie. You have Mai Sakurai, who's a good wrestler, just not being pushed, probably because they had a feeling she was leaving. And you know, there's something there to work with. And of course, I'm sure that he will start training new wrestlers, and there will be others coming. I mean, most people believe that Mayu Iwatani thinks of him as basically a father figure in effect and is likely to follow along. She has contractual commitments to Stardom for a while now. So there's going to be a lot of change going in that direction. So for now, Iwatani is the IWGP Women's Champion. For now, because she has movie coming out, she's staying with the company. For now. So what that company looks like by the time Historic Crossover comes around, we don't even know when Historic Crossover is happening. They haven't announced anything, so we have no idea. So right now Rossi has a base to work with. Stardom still has a lot of talent. I mean, the fact that those people are leaving, you look at their roster, there's still a ton of really good wrestlers there. It's going to be a very interesting landscape for the next year to follow right now. So okay, well, with that, why don't we wrap it up for this week?
Let's hit 90 minutes.
Hit all 90. Okay, well, there you go. Well, Venkin just, well, we can read a comment here. That'll help. Venkin just says, the next thing we know, we'll have Saray as the IWGP Women's Champion. I don't know why I pronounced that long E. Saray as the Women's Champion. Well, she's about the best wrestler in the world that's not signed to Stardom right now, or WWE, I suppose. But it's she's really, really good. She seems to like her freelance life a little bit better right now, as it turns out. But who knows? I mean, she would be the top free agent in the game in Joshi wrestling right there. So and she's very good friends with Natsupoi. She made her first ever appearance for Stardom in Natsupoi's comeback match from injury. And thank God we have her back, by the way. That's a big deal. Sharks just mentions that if these names are the extent of it, Stardom will be fine talent wise. Yeah, it's not the end of it, but it's who's able to leave right now. Just about everybody believes there will be more down the road. But, you know, Bushiroad will know who's leaving and who's not, and they'll be able to make adjustments, and they have a little bit of time. The thing is, it's not a pro wrestling Noah All Japan situation where everybody leaves all at once and cripples the company. That isn't what's happening because of the way they have the staggered ending dates to the contracts and things. So pro wrestling Noah's formation almost myrtleized All Japan completely. But we're not going to get that here. We're just going to have two competing companies, and we'll see if Rossi sinks or swims. That's
it'll be fine. It'll all be fine.
It'll all be fine. We have reached our time for this week. We are going to be back next Thursday at our usual time. Thanks to everybody for all the questions. Dunstan, Venkin, Colin, and everybody, Twan. The whole gang. Just everybody. We really appreciate that you guys join us here. And also what we have, just a whole group that we have, Hassan. We're very glad that you guys join us here. And for everybody that listens later, don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all that kind of stuff, and tell a New Japan curious friend. So with that in mind, for Jeremy Finestone, I'm Stephen Conway. Thank you once again for joining us for Speaking of Strong Style. We'll be back next week, and we will be talking to you again very soon.